Did you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Market Circle, the makers of Daylight, and by Spotlight Branding, helping to build your internet foundation. I use Daylight as my case management tool. It organizes all my cases, clients, my calendar, to-dos, and emails all in one app that's with me on my Mac, iPhone, and iPad. I use Daylight on my own, but you can also use it in a team. You can use Daylight to track the status of cases, delegate tasks to each other, and see everyone's schedule, all without having to interrupt anyone. Daylight is one of the tools I use to stay organized and increase efficiency. Visit marketcircle.com/daylight to try Daylight for free for 30 days. And be sure to let them know you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. This episode is also brought to you by my friends at Spotlight Branding. I trust them to manage the internet presence for my law firm, and I recommend them to solo lawyers every chance I get. They built a great website for me, and they use video marketing, social media, email marketing, and more to keep me top of mind with my referral network. Visit spotlightbranding.com to learn more. They're even offering a free gift for podcast listeners, which you can access at spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in The Law Entrepreneur. spotlightbranding.com/TLE, brought to you by our friends at Spotlight Branding. Today's episode features my friend Craig Miller, a personal injury attorney in downtown Washington, D.C., and a little different take on the interview today. We're going to spend majority of the time talking about the mindset that's necessary for a solo practitioner to venture into personal injury as a practice area, and then specifically the more complicated and complex arena of medical malpractice. Craig is an expert in both areas, and I think his views on what it takes to be a good attorney in those specialty areas is very insightful, and I wanted to share that with you today. So without any further delay, here is Craig Miller. Hey there, Craig Miller. Welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Hi, Neil. It's great to be here.
Well, I'm glad that you had the time to spend with me. For those of our listeners who have been with us since the beginning or have started with us from the beginning, you'll recognize Craig Miller as being the other half of Simeon & Miller, the law firm, frankly, that I started with straight out of law school. And we had Tom Simeon as our first guest entrepreneur. So it's been long overdue, Craig, and taking the time to carve it out for your appearance on the show. But thanks for being here. Take a little bit of time and share with our audience who you are, where you come from, and how you came to be.
I'm originally from the Severna Park area, and I think I always thought that I was going to be a trial lawyer, and I went to law school at George Washington University Law School, and I went directly into doing trial practice. And I was working with Tom at this other law firm, and after a few years, we decided that it would be good to go out on our own, and that's how we started Simeon & Miller. And Tom was first on the name, and now he was first on your podcast. So I've been second a lot, it seems like.
but equally fine in terms of representation. Craig, you said something interesting. You said you always thought you knew that you wanted to be a trial attorney. Did you always know, first off, that you wanted to be an attorney?
I think from a very early age, I thought that I was argumentative. And people generally thought of me that way. And I think people always told me that was, you know, that would be a calling for me. And as a person that grew up with two middle-class parents, it appealed to me, the idea that I would, you know, probably be, I would have been the first lawyer in the family. And so I think that I always thought that that's probably where I was going.
That's interesting. And then having said that, you said you always wanted, you thought you always wanted to be a trial attorney. Is that because that's what you envisioned an attorney doing, or because you were drawn to the courtroom?
I think it's more the former than the latter. What I knew about an attorney was being a trial attorney. That's what I thought attorneys did. It's funny that when I first got an internship, when I went to look for an internship, when I was in undergraduate, I just wanted to intern someplace in the summer. And I just didn't really know a whole lot about like big law firms, any of that, because I was from a middle-class family. I didn't know anybody who was lawyers. I didn't know any of that. And so I went in the Yellow Pages and I looked at law firms that had listings in the Yellow Pages with big ads, and called them, cold called them, and asked them if they were looking for somebody to help them out in the summer, because that's what I associated as lawyers.
And that drew you into a trial practice internship?
Yeah, I had a trial practice internship for a couple of years. And then when I went to GW for law school, it just so happened that my legal research and writing professor was a trial lawyer. And we went to, he had an opening in the summer, and he ended up hiring me.
It's interesting, I think, that your focus was on a trial practice, because I find a lot of folks who've gone to law school, they don't really know what kind of law they want to practice. They want to be a lawyer, or they think they want to be a lawyer. And I know in my own situation, I really wasn't sure what area of law I wanted to practice in. And I remember the first day at Catholic University Law School, the Columbus School of Law, they asked you this question on the first day: what area of law do you want to practice in? And if you don't know it on the first day, you better know it by the end of the first year. And I just thought that was kind of an interesting difference, because in undergrad, you're really given to the end of your undergrad experience, more or less, to figure out where you want to go with that degree. But with law school, it's completely the opposite. You need to know at the beginning.
Yeah, I think I'm not sure that you really do need to know, but I agree with you that there's definitely, they give you more urgency to know. I'm a believer that you can probably figure it out. Even if you happen to be practicing, you could be practicing corporate law, and I think you could go and do what I'm doing. And I would think that I could go and practice corporate law if I wanted to. Of course, certain things I think would be, there would be a lot of a learning, like patent or trademark law would definitely be quite a learning curve.
I think that's actually one of the things that interests me the most about the practice of law, is that if your interests change, or your focus change, or even your circumstances or situation changes, you can recast yourself as a different type of an attorney. I mean, I went to law school with the really firm belief that I was going to be a prosecutor. And I graduated law school with the real firm belief that I was going to be a prosecutor. And it was just at the very end, I chickened out and said, let me try something different. And this wonderful firm, Simeon & Miller, gave me a shot at going downtown. And I thought that just sounded great. So all of a sudden, I'm a personal injury attorney.
Yeah, that's, it doesn't always work out exactly how you think it's going to. That's for sure.
And speaking about personal injury, I wanted to not necessarily spend a lot of time talking about the history of your firm and how you practice and all those things, since we've heard that earlier. What I'd like to spend a little more time talking about is, in fact, the practice of personal injury and why that was attractive to you, and what are the challenges or hurdles that one has to get over in order to be a good personal injury attorney.
Well, so personal injury held three things that I really liked about personal injury law. First of all, the interactions with clients and helping people. You know, I know a lot of people say that and they give lip service to it, but it really is satisfying to, you know, get a hug from the client at the end of the case because you've helped them through something that was very traumatic for them. The second thing is that unlike almost everything else in the law, you're actually rewarded for your efficiency as a personal injury attorney. You are working on contingency fee basis. And so the more efficient you are, the more money you make per hour, in essence. And I liked that. One of the things I didn't like about law school is I felt like law school was a lot of busy work. I felt like that we were reading 50-page cases in order to learn a holding that was a couple of sentences long. And then, you know, the next case you read explained why the holding in the last case was no longer
good law.
why there was a different holding. Right. Yeah, it was no longer good law. And I was like, well, why don't we just teach it like we taught everything else? Where they just tell you what the law is and they explain to you how they got to it, and that's basically the end of it. You could do it in one class as opposed to over weeks and weeks and weeks at a time. So I definitely liked the efficiency of it, and I definitely liked the and then the third thing that I liked about it is the actual trial practice itself. I wanted to be a trial lawyer. I wanted to get up in front of juries. I wanted to litigate cases. And so that combination is what drew me to personal injury work.
I find this fascinating, Craig, that the number one issue that you said attracted you to personal injury was the interaction with the clients and the idea of helping people. You know, sadly, personal injury lawyers in a lot of cases have that negative stereotype of being the ambulance chaser. And the general public doesn't look at those types of attorneys as being somebody who actually is helping the public out. But as you know, and I came to understand, when somebody is injured through no fault of their own, it is a traumatic experience for them. And you helping them get through that is, you know, tremendously satisfying and helpful to them. And in turn, they are grateful to you. And there is that sense of gratitude between the client and the attorney. And even if, you know, you don't prevail as much as maybe you might hope or they might hope or even at all, the fact that you've helped them through this process is a supportive way is impressive.
You know, I think lawyers are a lot like doctors, especially personal injury lawyers. You have people that get into personal injury law for a lot of different reasons. And just like you have doctors that get into being a doctor for a lot of different reasons. Some people become doctors because they want to be rich or what they think is rich. I don't think it's as lucrative a profession as it once was in comparison to other things. And the same is true, I think, for personal injury lawyers. There are people that definitely get into personal injury law. They're not necessarily, they don't really care that much about the clients themselves. They're doing it just to make money, and it's a means to an end for them. And then there are people out there that are just absolutely sacrificing, and they sacrifice to the point for their clients that it actually is probably bad business for them. And that's why you see a lot of personal injury lawyers that do a bad job as a business. I mean, I see practices that I would think would be a lot more successful monetarily than they actually are. And part of the reason is because they forget that it's a business. And then, you know, and then there's some sort of in between. And, you know, I think I'm probably a little bit more in between in the sense that I care deeply about these people that I'm working with. I have clients that text me at all hours of the night sometimes, and I will text them back. But I remember that I read somewhere or heard somewhere where somebody said that you should take all of the pictures that you have in your office and you should turn them toward you and not turn them away from you. And the reason you turn them toward you, the pictures of your family members toward you, is to remember that your practice at the end of the day has to support those family members as well.
Yeah, that's a really important point, and it goes along with your second basis for, or the second thing you mentioned for being a trial lawyer was the fact that you were drawn to the efficiency of the personal injury practice, and that the more efficient you service a case, the greater the value is for you, the more you make on a per hour basis, if you will. Talk about a little bit about how you try and make those cases efficient.
Well, I mean, the big thing is making sure that whatever you're doing is something that actually is adding value to the case. One of the things, there's a lot of stuff about technology right now. And I know people that, for example, have a quote-unquote paperless office. And they scan everything in, and everything is in the cloud, and they don't have any paper, and supposedly that's like this wonderfulness. Well, the problem is that, I've tried to do that in certain cases. We've actually experimented with it. And every time I go to do that sort of thing, the technology, I don't believe, is actually adding any value for us. Because by the time you take the time to scan it in, and then somebody has to save it to a certain file for the client. And then once it's saved to the certain file for the client, you have to access it. And then a lot of people aren't good at reading PDFs online, for example, and they end up printing it out again anyhow in order to look at it so that they can review it. By the time you do all of those things, have you really, at the end of the day, made more money? Have you really become more efficient? Most people have it. So it's like technology for technology's sake. And I think that that's a big thing with regard to the law, is you need to know that the technologies that you are using are actually enhancing your practice, as opposed to simply making it so that everything looks cleaner.
Well, I'll freely admit to being, the guy who has the technology tail wagging his dog. I mean, I'm guilty of that. And you're exactly correct. I just to fully open the kimono and show, my frailties here, I can spend a whole day chasing a technology issue. And at the end of the day, I say to myself, that was really kind of fulfilling that I got to the bottom of this, but I forgot why I was doing this. And I haven't done any work on the case at the moment. So I think that's wise counsel for people to pay attention to make. I love pushing technology forward as a means of gaining greater efficiency. And I'm sure that I have done that in my own practice, but it is a slippery slope. You can get to the point where you're just doing it for the sake of being able to do it, as opposed to enhancing your ability to process the case efficiently.
That's absolutely right. I would caution anybody, whenever you're going to invest in any sort of new technology, look at it and say to yourself, is it truly going to make us more efficient? And if you can't answer that question, then you shouldn't be investing in that technology.
Sure.
You absolutely should.
Does the actual law surrounding personal injury, does that still excite you? Do you still find interest in that?
Yeah, it does. I think, it's interesting. I practice in three different jurisdictions, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. And it's interesting because you can see things will happen, and there'll be a trend in Virginia, and then you'll see that it starts to happen in Maryland and then in D.C. And, I find that that's interesting, where I can use something that's happening more in Maryland and being used, and an issue that's coming up more in Maryland, and I can use it, for example, in Virginia or in a DC case, and people look at me like they have no idea. People are very surprised to see that issue come up.
This episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Market Circle, the makers of Daylight. As I mentioned, I use Daylight as my case management tool, as it organizes all my cases, clients, my calendar, to-dos, emails, all in one app. And it's with me everywhere because it's on my Mac, my iPhone, and my iPad. If I get a call from a client when I'm out of the office, I can quickly pull up the details of the case on my iPhone and then jot down some notes after the call, and it's all organized in Daylight. I use Daylight by myself on my own, but you can also use it in a team. You can track the status of cases, delegate tasks between one another, and check everyone's calendars, all without having to interrupt anyone or dig through papers. It really streams your workflow so you can work more efficiently. Managing email is a big part of how Daylight helps me. It integrates with Apple Mail, so as I'm going through my emails, I can just click and save emails to a client or to a case. That way, when I'm looking at the case details, I can see a history of all the emails with the client or any notes that I've taken and follow-ups with them all in one spot. So visit marketcircle.com/daylight to try Daylight free for 30 days. And be sure to let them know you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. In addition, I want to tell you about my friends at Spotlight Branding. I trust them to manage the internet presence for my law firm, and I recommend them to solo lawyers every chance I get. They build a great website for me, and they use video marketing, social media, email marketing, and more to keep me top of mind with my referral network. And this helps me generate more referrals and more business for my firm. Their services are designed to help lawyers get better results out of the resources they're already investing into marketing and business development. They create an internet foundation that makes all of your marketing work better. That's because these days, almost every potential client is going to check out your web presence before they hire you. It's important that you create a strong first impression. And that's what Spotlight Branding has done for me, and they can do it for you too. So visit spotlightbranding.com to learn more. They're even offering a free gift for our podcast listeners, which you can access at spotlightbranding.com/TLE. Just to go off on a tangent here a little bit about the law, and so for those of our listeners who aren't in our local jurisdictions, do you think we're ever going to get to a comparative negligence state?
Well, D.C. is going to have some comparative negligence law soon. There's a statute that's passed that is going to give comparative negligence for pedestrians and bikers. In D.C.
Yeah, I think that was just, wasn't that just recently, a couple weeks ago?
Yeah, it just recently passed. So yeah. Are we ever going to get completely to comparative negligence and get outside of the dark ages? I don't know. There are a lot of different issues with regard to that. I think some worry that if that gets broached in the local state houses, that what ends up happening is that then there's talk of no-fault insurance and that sort of thing. And I think that some people don't really want to go down that road where we rip everything up that we've all known and, you know, create some sort of new legislative scheme.
Now, in your practice, you have grown from a straightforward personal injury docket to the more complex and frankly, the more gut-wrenching at times medical malpractice. How did you make that transition? What led you towards that end of the spectrum?
Well, I had done medical malpractice work when I was at my former firm, and I always liked the challenge of it. It's interesting to learn the medicine. The cases tend to be a lot more challenging in terms of the facts that are involved and the liability issues that are involved. And so I think that I was drawn to those cases. And also from a standpoint of a law firm, and that's what you have to always remember, is that you are a law firm. You are a business. And from a business perspective, if you can choose those cases wisely, they can be a wise investment in your business. So that combination of things, you know, attracted me to medical malpractice cases and other complex cases too, because we do other stuff. We've done some products liability stuff and some other things.
Sure. It's a real challenge because I think most people understand fundamentally that the doctors are trying to do their best, and there's wonderful advances in medicine that have been recognized, but yet at the same time, it too is a business that services millions of clients, millions of patients a day, and mistakes are going to happen. And it doesn't make people, you know, bad doctors, but well, of course there are those. But generally speaking, mistakes are going to happen, and negligence is going to occur, and somebody's going to be damaged. And so we don't have a way of fixing that other than to do what you do. And so it's a challenge. I see it as a real challenge for you, and you handle it, you know, tremendously well. Others, not so much.
Yeah, well, you know, what we try to do and what I try to do is I try to make sure that the cases we get involved in are meritorious cases. I mean, obviously, you always want to be involved in meritorious cases, but are going to be cases that it makes sense from a business standpoint for us to be involved in. You have to think that way. The hardest thing to do in this practice is to turn people down that you know have suffered just heart-wrenching injuries. It's the hardest thing to do because you got into this, and I get it, got into this case, into this to help people. And there are certain cases that we take in this firm, and there are cases that we pursue in this firm that I know we will not make money, but I just do it for the principle of things sometimes. Sometimes you just have to do that. But as long as you realize that you're doing that, that's fine. The problem is people that do these cases and they do, you know, larger litigation cases, and they think, well, you know, if I settle or resolve one out of every four and, you know, I lose one out of every four, then I'm still doing good. I'm great. And that's probably not the case. You need to realize that you have to be more successful than that. And as long as you are cognizant of that as you're taking cases, that you're then you're going to be fine. But remember, whenever you take any case, that every bit of time that you spend on that case, you're taking away from time that you can spend on other cases. And so there is always an opportunity cost to any case that you take.
One of the things that I think I'm seeing in spending more time talking with folks who have a solo practice or a small firm practice is I have this belief, I think it's borne out by the statistics, that as the legal profession shrunk a little bit in terms of hiring, that more and more of the law school graduates are being forced to go into practice on their own if they're going to practice law at all. And concurrent with that, a lot of these new attorneys are going straight into personal injury, and in some cases, jumping right into a, you know, a medical malpractice claim right from the very beginning. Do you see that trend, and do you have any views on this, on the wisdom of doing so?
Okay, so I see this a little bit, but I probably defense attorneys probably would see it a lot more because we as plaintiff's attorneys, we don't really see a lot of what the other plaintiff's attorneys see.
That's a fair point.
Where I do see it is I see people that come to me and they'll say, oh, I went to such and such and they've done a lousy job on my case and now I want to move my case to you. And sometimes I can go to them and I can say, yes, okay, we'll take it. But sometimes, unfortunately, they're too far down the road and I have to tell them that I have to turn it away. So I can see that. I think that the mistake that people make with regard to personal injury work is they look at it as easy. They think that somehow it's easier than doing some of this other work. And because of that, they can make a quick buck. And they get lulled into a false sense of security.
Please, yeah, go ahead.
I can expand on that a little bit if you want me to. So I'll give you a great example. There was a law firm that we knew that was in Virginia, and they were local counsel in some sort of personal injury firm case. And they were a law firm that they never did any personal injury work before this. They got taken, they were local counsel, and it was a pretty lucrative case, and I think they made a lot of money on the case as local counsel. So all of a sudden, they looked at it and they said, oh, wow, you know, this personal injury lawyer stuff, this is easy stuff. There's easy money to be made here. They poured all kinds of money into Yellow Pages ads, and they had television advertisements, all kinds of things. They just went full bore into it. And within a few years, they were bankrupt. They had made so many mistakes. They had screwed up so many cases that they really were no longer viable as a firm. And I remember some of those cases were actually referred to us at the very end to just sort of close them out. And, you know, we got some resolutions and we were ending up sending cases to the bankruptcy estate, you know, in those particular cases. And, but, you know, that shows you. So usually with personal injury cases, when you see guys that say, I'm going to become a personal injury lawyer, their first experience is they happen to get a case that happens to see, to have a pretty easy fact pattern to it. They get a resolution to that case, and then they're like, oh, this is easy. I'm just going to do lots of these. And it's not that simple.
Well, I think one of the issues is that the barrier to entry is not as high as it may be in some other areas of the law, or if you're particularly trying to create a niche for yourself in a practice area. One of the things that I think is clear that there's a lot of competition in the personal injury space, and the public oftentimes what they see is the firm that's able to spend money on you know, TV ads and radio advertisements. And the thrust there seems to be, we'll fight for you. We're bulldog tough. We're the baddest, you know, guys in town. I think that does us a disservice to those of you who are practicing the personal injury space. Do you share that opinion?
I think it definitely can at times. I know that there, what are the, there's I can't think of the name of the, there are the commercials with the, that literally have, it sounds like a monster truck rally. And, they show cars like running into people. There's the hammer, those hammer ads, those are amazing. It's amazing to me that any lawyer that does those types of ads, it's Mike the Hammer or something, could ever get a case. It does an absolute disservice to us with regard to that. But at the same time, I know that part of it is, and that's part of the thing that we deal with, is that when you're injured like this, the people are upset. They are angry, and they want to make sure that the person that they have will fight for them. And so that's why that whole "we will fight for you" pitch works. People do want that. The problem is that I think that sometimes as lawyers are promising things that they really can't deliver, and they're not necessarily being honest with their clients as to what potential resolutions will be.
Absolutely. Now, I know in the practice area that I'm spent a lot of time in these days, family law, one of the characteristics that an attorney needs to have is got to have a little bit of thick skin, because family law, there's some, challenging issues dealing with custody and divorce and child support and the like. In terms of a personal injury lawyer, is there a particular skill set or personal attribute that you think helps an attorney in that arena?
You know, it's interesting. I think you have to kind of divide it up between the actual litigation of the cases and then the dealing with the clients. With regard to the dealing with the clients, you've got to have sympathy and empathy. That's one of the things that we talk about in this firm a lot with the people that work for us, is to remember who it is that you're dealing with and remember that this is an important thing for them. For a lot of our clients, this might be the only interaction that they'll ever have with an attorney in their entire life. This is really important to them. And, if you've done thousands and thousands of cases like we have, or some of my staff have done, then, it can be very easy to become very jaded and to forget how important it is for somebody else. So that's, with regard to the clients, I think sympathy and empathy, that's very, very important. With regard to actual litigation skills, I think the most important thing by far is being able to relate, is being able to tell your client's story. You've got to be able to distill your client's story to sometimes we say like in 10 seconds, you've got to be able to tell exactly what happened to your client in 10 seconds. And then you've got to be able to spend a substantial amount of time with a jury explaining to them how those 10 seconds have affected the rest of their life. And if you can't do that, you're not going to be a good trial lawyer.
Al, are you still going to court? You still enjoying the fight?
Yeah, I do. It's definitely enjoyable. I think just like anything else, when you, the hard part about going to court is the preparation. But once you're actually in there and you feel the flow of adrenaline, it's very, very satisfying. And it's even more satisfying, obviously, when the jury comes back with a verdict in your favor.
Sure. Now talk, as we're starting to wrap this up here a little bit, talk a little bit, if you would, about your observations of how the business of law is being conducted these days and how you've adapted to that.
So the biggest thing that I see with regard to the business of law is just the technology changes. That's the biggest thing. You know, it was interesting today. I actually I resolved the case, and I was emailing back and forth with with an insurance adjuster to resolve the case. And you might say, "Oh, well, email. I mean, that's an ancient technology." Well, it is an ancient technology, but it's not a technology that insurance adjusters have been using until very recently, for the most part. And sort of change things. The other thing that's changed things technology-wise, and this definitely can be an issue, is texting. I have a fair amount of clients that will text me. I'm a little bit careful with regard to that because you have archiving issues and that sort of thing. And then the other thing is that once you open up that avenue to you, clients can feel as if you never have any sort of you're never off, in essence. And you've got to be careful about that because you might think that when you leave at 6 o'clock, for example, and you're home and all you're doing is, you know, you check the email a couple times and maybe answered a couple texts and you went to bed at 11 o'clock at night, that you didn't work, but you did. And it will take a toll on you and it will affect your ability to do your business the next day, the next week, the next month. So you have to be careful with that.
Yeah, it is a slippery slope. You need to be mindful of that separation of, you know, work and personal life. You know, I'm going to finish here, Craig, and confess to you that your voice still rings in my head frequently when I'm practicing. And one of the things I'll never forget you telling me, when I was going through, frankly, to be honest with you, I was going through a challenging period with Simeone Miller. I'd made a bunch of mistakes and they kept piling up on each other and it just was kind of coming into a perfect storm. And I remember you said to me, "You have to think, Neil, at the beginning of the day, what can I do today that's going to keep me from being disbarred?" And if you operated under that belief that you would avoid any of these major obstacles and even some of the minor ones, and your life was going to be a lot easier. I don't suppose when you said that you would think that 10, 12 years later, I'd still be remembering that statement and actually trying to live and conduct my business with that in mind.
Can I tell you, that makes me feel so good that it actually did resonate with you, because I really do believe in that. And I'll tell you that it was interesting when you were working with us, because you're substantially older than I am. And, you know, sometimes you have a conversation like that with somebody who's been in the workforce for a long period of time and, you know, has been successful in a lot of other things in their life. And you wonder whether, you know, I remember as I was saying that to you, I'm wondering, you know, is this guy just listening to me and just nodding his head and going, "Oh, what is this idiot know?" Some young kid, you know? And, you know, it's interesting that did stick with you. And that is all part of, you know, being efficient and being smart about the way that you tackle things. The biggest mistake that lawyers make is they come in every day and they go through their list and they make way too long a list of things that they want, that they have to get through in a given day. And then what happens is invariably they don't get through the entire list, and then they have all of the pressure of not getting through that list for the next day. When you come in the morning, like I, you know, said to you, the first thing I think about is, what is it, if I don't do it, is going to either get me sued for malpractice or disbarred? And then once I get past that, that's like the thing. Okay, now I'm done that. And most of the time, that's almost nothing. But, you know, I mean, sometimes it can be, well, you know, I've got a expert designation that I have to do, or I've got this complaint that needs to be filed or something like that. And then once, yeah, that's exactly right. You know, the easy ones. So then I get that done. And then the next thing I do is, okay, what is it that if I don't get done today is maybe not going to get me disbarred or sued, but it is going to make my life a lot more miserable because it's going to make a lot more work down the road. Then I deal with that. And then, you know, and then it's, okay, well, what's the next thing that's due in terms of in terms of deadlines that I really need to get started on? And I really firmly believe in that. And your list at the beginning of the day, if you come in and you know, I learned making lists from Tom, actually. Tom makes a list every day and he needs to get through it in order to feel good. I can leave stuff off my list, but Tom, like, he'll want to stay late in order to finish his list. Yes. Right.
Because his list is not complete. Yeah. Not for any other reason, but this OCD approach to my list is not, I haven't scratched everything off my list.
Right. So, you know, but I tend to break the list up a little bit more, I think. I'll come in if it seems like that the whole world is coming down on me and it seems like that I have so much stress, I'll come in and I'll say, I'll make a list of four or five things that, you know, I just really want to get done and I can get them, and I know for sure I can get them done in the day. You know, maybe they're only going to take me an hour and a half or 2 hours. And then I'll go through those and I'll cross those things off. And then when I'm done with those, then I can come back and I can make another list. There's nothing that says that you can't make more than one list in a day. You're allowed to. It's okay. And actually, you know what? When you complete everything on a list and then you can go and make another list, it makes you feel kind of good. So, you know, that's another piece of advice that I would give to people is to practice in that manner.
Well, I'll leave you with this one thought. Gary Keller, in his book, The One Thing, which is a phenomenal book if you or our listeners have not read it, is based on the premise of this one statement, and that is, what is the one thing that I can do today such that by doing it, everything else will be easier or unnecessary? And I put that on a little sticky pad, and it stuck on my computer. And I have tried to follow that approach. What is the one thing I can do today such that by doing it, everything else is either unnecessary or easier? And frequently, the one thing I'm looking at is, what is the one thing that's also going to keep me from being sued for malpractice or disbarred, as Craig Miller would say? So you have tied those two thoughts together for me, Craig, and I am very appreciative of it.
Yes, I'm happy to do so. And the one other thing I would say is, think to yourself, what did I do to make myself better today at the end of everything?
Yeah, really good point. Craig, thanks ever so much for being on The Law Entrepreneur. I do appreciate it, and I look forward to chatting with you again soon. Once again, I'd like to thank our friends at Market Circle, the makers of Daylight and Spotlight Branding, for being sponsors of today's podcast. Market Circles, as the makers of Daylight, provide the tool that I use to manage my cases, my clients, my calendar, my to-dos, the emails, and they do so all in one app that stays with me on my Mac, my iPhone, and my iPad. I use Daylight on my own in a solo environment, but you can also use it in a team. You can use Daylight to track the status of cases and delegate tasks to one another on your team, and you can see everyone's schedule all without having to interrupt anyone. Daylight is one of the tools that I use to stay organized, and it increases my efficiency, and therefore it only stands to reason that it'll do the same for you and your team if you use it in a broader environment. So visit marketcircle.com/daylight to try Daylight free for 30 days. And be sure to let them know that you heard about Daylight through The Law Entrepreneur in order to get a 50% discount on your first monthly subscription. Also, our friends at Spotlight Branding, as always, have been very helpful in sponsoring this podcast. You know, I trust them to manage the internet presence for my law firm, and I recommend them to solo lawyers every chance I get. They built a great website for me, and they use video marketing, social media, email marketing, and more to help keep me top of mind with my referral network. So visit www.spotlightbranding.com to learn more. They're even offering a free gift for podcast listeners, which you can access at spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in the law entrepreneur. So spotlightbranding.com/TLE to access your free gift. And as always, make sure that you visit our website, www.thelawentrepreneur.com, to see everything that's going on with the podcast and subscribe to our newsletter so that you can stay in the know and be the first on your block, so to speak, to gain insight into what's going on here. So once again, thanks for being here this time around. I appreciate your listenership. Hope to see you again next week on The Law Entrepreneur.